Hi, Nir. Welcome to Conscious Living and Power Radio. I'm Wendy Garrett. Thanks for tuning in. I appreciate your time and hope you're going to get something fun out of this show. Maybe a new method of connecting, contacting, communicating, listening, being awake, aware, and in some way, shape, or form, clued in to things that are around you all the time that just may be under the radar. Somebody who has an extensive background, and there's pretty much, if it's been done, she's done it. Nancy, I'm going to butcher the name, so I'll just get this out of the way. Duterte, okay? And Duterte is what she said. Here, try that. And I'm like, well, okay. Nancy, the book is called How to Talk to an Alien. All right. This is one of the things that is just fascinating to a lot of people right now, is that there's so many people said to be connecting or connected or abducted, or, and the shows are absolutely growing exponentially on talking to people who've been abductees, contactees, the whole nine yards. TalkAlien.com is Nancy's website. You can check out the website and the book, How to Talk to an Alien. But I wanted to talk with Nancy because her stories are fabulous. I love the things that you have done in your lifetime, the remote viewing, all the things you have in your background that make you an excellent, incredible resource for this kind of content. So thank you for that.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
When you're talking about this content, what do most people, you know, just bring it up out of the blue? Do you get a typical response at this point?
Yeah. I mean, there are a couple of typical responses, which is either a deer stuck in the headlights and then quickly change the subject, or people can't get enough. It's just, I mean, and fascinating is a word that I hear over and over and over again. So, and for me, of course, it is fascinating, which is why I wrote the book.
When did you first become involved with this?
Well, when you say this, what do you mean exactly?
I was afraid I'd have to get more specific. Okay. The connecting with aliens and that content, did that start back when you were doing the remote viewing, or did that come later?
No, this has all been, I'm not quite sure how this came about, actually. And the more that I've been asked that, the less I seem to know. I thought that I was sort of aware of my process. I mean, my background, just really quickly, is, you know, not being in any way psychic or interested in paranormal stuff, and certainly not UFOs or aliens. I ran a number of businesses. I practiced securities litigation as an attorney in New York for a while. Ran a company a company that's family owned. We manufactured porcelain. I did a bunch of things. Then I suddenly did a detour and got interested in intuition, the psychology of intuition, and that sort of led me, by virtue of the fact that there was this terrible vacuum in science on the topic, I got into psychic types of intuition, and then I trained for about a decade to become a psychic detective, and I trained to become a spiritual medium, trained to become a medical intuitive, trained to become a remote viewer, and somewhere down, and I never, ever in a million years thought that any of that stuff was going to be related to aliens or UFOs. I had a major sighting of a UFO with my daughter about 5 years ago. And when you see something the size of a football field just sitting in the sky, covered with 20 or 30 orange lights, and there's an orb that comes off of it, goes around it, redocks, and then the whole thing dematerializes cloaks in about three phases. It's sort of a game changer for everything. And it makes you suddenly realize that what you always thought was reality and you know, our universe is larger. And there are more things. So I got into thinking about UFOs and into ufology, discovered there's a connection between all the work I've done in the psychic field and the paranormal field.
What I've noticed is that when people become more in tuned or aware in some way, shape, or form, they kind of up their vibration, their frequency, I think they're resonant so that you can basically get a feel for this other being, this other presence. And then they seem to come to us. And I was wondering if it's more that entity, energy, UFO, was more interested in you or your daughter. And could you tell?
That's a really good question. The thing that seemed to be, well, there was about a 20 foot in diameter white luminescent orb that telescoped open off of one of the wings of this boomerang shaped craft. It detached and it went around the craft. And for some reason, I clearly understood that it was searching for something. Whether it was looking at us, I mean, I can tell you, we were the only people standing at 11:45 p.m. outside of this movie theater in a huge parking lot that was completely vacant. There was nobody around as far as I could tell, at least probably a good half mile around. So if they were looking at something, yeah, it could have been us, and it could have been a connection. It did make me realize that I had seen UFOs prior to that, and it did also make me realize, I mean, I saw many of them since then, and my daughter and I had telephone calls after that. Well, not exactly calls, they would interrupt our phone calls, and we would hear electronic voices, and there was no way that could have been some type of, you know, third-party line telephone interference kind of thing, because I know what that sounds like, and that was not this. So I do think that there was a communication that went on with the two of us for quite a while afterwards.
Do you think it was with the electronic thing? Do you think it was something that you just couldn't hear or understand?
Oh, no. I mean, you could hear it for sure. It sounded like a male voice. It sounded like an electronic voice coming through very, very thick sound wave distortion. Every once in a while, you could sort of, almost like, you know, words on the tip of your tongue, you could sort of make out words. It did say my daughter's name once. It also interrupted phone calls between her and some of her friends and me and some of my clients, actually. And it wasn't always a voice. Sometimes it was pure sounds and noises and music, the likes of which I have never, ever heard in my entire life. And, you know, that was sort of verified by people I was dealing with, too. They told me afterwards, they said, you know, whatever that was not of this earth. And it didn't sound like it was from this earth.
If it's trying to make contact, but we don't understand this mechanical, there's something else going on, and we're just, it's like a different language. And you talk about different languages in your book. So I guess my point was, do you think that this was a language of something, you know, trying to make connection, and we're just not there yet, or if it was just interference?
Oh, yeah, no, it was clearly a language. That, I mean, I have absolutely no doubt that it was clearly a language. I didn't understand everything, and it was very, very difficult, as I said, to really catch what it was saying through this very thick sound wave distortion. But it was obviously a language. I've heard a friend of mine, he's a contactee and has been, I mean, it's sort of a long story, but he claims that he has been told that he is a time traveler and that he's with a group that has several very large craft outside the Earth's atmosphere, one of them being a language craft. And he gets phone calls from these beings, whether they are humans from the future or humanoids or whatever they are. And I think some of them are not. I think some of them are like certain types of gray aliens. At any rate, he's played for me some of these, he's recorded some of these phone calls. And when you hear them, his are slightly different from the ones that I was hearing. His come through sometimes speaking alien languages, and they speak, it sort of sounds like a middle-aged Asian lady speaking. They speak very fast. It's like trying to listen to somebody who's got a really, really, really thick accent when they're speaking English. So, I mean, they might sound sort of like, they're coming out, my car is like this, and they, it's my, it's hard. I mean, I'm not doing it very well, but it's sort of like that.
Yeah.
And it's difficult. I mean, you really got to strain in order to figure out if you're going to break it into English, assuming they're speaking English, what it is that they're actually saying. Because he's very familiar with them, and apparently his girlfriend has heard him speaking in whatever their language is on the phone, but he has absolutely no recollection of that.
That's what's fascinating. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that he's tuned in to not only that language, but also what the accent that they would be speaking when they're speaking English.
Well, it's almost having a silent personality, a latent, you know, some part of you that's clearly in connection when the other part is completely uninformed.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Well, and that's the whole thing with, you know, what I've been able to research about how they're dealing with us in terms of communication. Because if you look at a lot of the abduction cases, the contactee cases, people are being manipulated into a certain trance-like states or being used in hypnagogic states, or their loved ones or families are put into a state of suspended animation. Memories are erased, or screen memories are implanted so that you won't remember that you saw, for example, little gray aliens, but you saw cute and fuzzy deer or owls or things like that. So there's, I believe, a huge amount of mind manipulation or interference that goes on that they're capable of. So,
well, my question is, part of this, and we're assuming that maybe there's some manipulation, but I remember the story that when the boats were first sighted off the shores of this continent, and the Native Americans who were here didn't know how to in some way, shape, or form rectify or categorize that because it was not in their frame of reference, they didn't recognize them as ships. And so that, and there was no manipulation. There wasn't anything in the card factory or card file or brain, you know, reference to say what this was. And so could that be part of our own situation right now?
Yeah, and the very well-known French ufologist Jacques Vallée has written about that, where he's cataloged all the different types of alien crafts that have been seen over thousands of years, and how people, not having a frame of reference or the words to describe them, have called them different things. Or you have, you know, going back to the Bible, Ezekiel's wheel, you know, which may have been a UFO. He just had different words, you know, called them wheels inside wheels. So, I think that I wrote about this in a previous book called Psychic Intuition, Everything You Always Wanted to Ask But Were Afraid to Know. And I do talk about the fact when we're dealing with, I wasn't talking about alien phenomena, but I was talking about psychic phenomena. We don't really have words to describe the things that we're experiencing. And when you don't have words, words act as like these little flags that you can use for later recognition and for memory. And if you don't have the flags, because you don't have a word, you're kind of in this I don't know, wasteland of data and information that you don't know where to put it or how to use it. And by the way, they've done certain studies, for example, split brain studies or left-right hemisphere studies of the brain, where if they, you know, put a you're not seeing through one eye or only one eye at a time, which means that only one hemisphere is seeing whatever it is that's in front of you. Very often, because the left hemisphere has got all the linguistic facilities in it, it'll, you know, if you've got a let's say a teacup in front of you, you're going to recognize that, or because the left hemisphere will say, oh, it's a teacup. Well, then you cover up the opposite eye and you look at through your right hemisphere, which is that holistic, spatially oriented, non-linguistic part of your brain, and it literally won't see it. It will not see a cup. You will not report seeing a teacup. And I believe that's because there's no word for it, and therefore there's no memory of it.
That, I think, is brilliant, because it gives people a context, especially like me. I've had my experiences, and I've had the psychic, the contact, the content, the prompt that says, okay, this is going to happen, be aware, and this is how you may or may not see it. And one time they gave me a picture of a colander where I could only see the very, like an outline of maybe a, you know, 6-inch square piece. I knew it was a colander, but because I was, my view was skewed, I was only going to see portions. And so that was the prompt, the psychic intuitive prompt that said, you're not going to have the whole picture because you can't see that much. You just have a very limited scope.
Yeah.
And, you know, instead of, they don't have the language to explain it, but I get it in pictures. I get it in little things like that, that they try to give me information to help me make sense of it. So that, to me, thank you. I really appreciate that. It makes so much more sense.
Oh, good. Yeah, well, it's kind of like, you know, if our word came, it's the old story about, you know, the elephant's tail, you know. If you can only hold on to the tail of the elephant, that's all that's going to be in your universe of understanding. You're not going to understand it's attached to an entire huge elephant. I think it's an old Indian adage or story about, you know, when the blind man who holds the tail of the elephant and just thinks it's a tail, but doesn't understand that there is an entire elephant attached, because in terms of his senses, he can't touch all the rest of the elephant. He can only feel the tail. So that's what I was trying to say about, you know, understanding your situation of getting just bits and pieces of those tiny pieces of the whole thing, because that's all that you can sort of grasp onto, at least in terms of comprehension.
I think there's another element, too, and when you were talking about earlier about the hearing and the voices and that kind of stuff, when I have been given a contact, the one thing that they said, first thing was, we don't want to scare you, and so I had to get over my fear. There was a part of me that I thought that was okay. I was not going to be afraid. I knew what was coming. I had been warned. And yet when I heard the voice that I could hear, and I don't know if anyone else could hear it, it was audible to me, 3 a.m. in the morning. It sounded a bit electronic because of the way that the vowels and the word was pronounced. It said my name. It came out sounding a little bit wonky to me, whanny. And when I heard that, because it was so foreign to me, my whole body went into like an auto freeze of, you know, fight or flight. But I had been warned. They said, we don't want to scare you. And then that something would happen, and this is what happened. They didn't tell me what was going to happen, that I was going to hear something. But for me to assume that it's an alien, or assume it's a transdimensional, or assume anything, I'm jumping to conclusions. I don't have the context, nor the intelligence, in my opinion, to assume I know what I'm dealing with. And I think I'm extrapolating and saying a lot of other encounters with this type of thing are in the same boat, because we're jumping to conclusions, thinking that this is all one thing or paranormal or extraterrestrial. And right now, the whole, it's like the barn door has been open and they're all coming in. Does that make sense?
It's true. I mean, and also, I mean, you apparently had some history where you said you were afraid, you were being forewarned, so you got a sense that there was going to be contact. So you had sort of a history and a buildup of something, a context for that voice calling your name. But I can tell you, because I wrote about that phenomenon in my book, Psychic Intuition, that's actually, it's a relatively common phenomenon. For almost everybody is heard somewhere, usually in some type of a light sleep state, they've heard their voice sounding like it's being called outside of their ear, or outside of their brain.
I've had that too. That's different. I also am an intuitive. I've dealt with people who are no longer in a body, non-corporeals. I've had this experience going on since 1997 where I have this energy in my house that manipulates the night lights and connects. I'm a channel. I've done these things. This was a mechanical outside from the other end of the room voice, and I was prepared because they told me you're going to have to get over your fear to be able to make these kinds of contacts. Because right. The fear shuts down those other abilities we have that are, in a way, autopilot, but they aren't. We don't deal with them 24/7, so we haven't really activated some of us and engaged that talent until basically we're like a deer in the headlights, face to face with these other beings, and they're trying to make contact in a way so as not to scare the pants off of us or scare us into a coma, a stupor. And this is a gentle way of saying, we are here, get over it, it's okay. And so when I felt a fear and I thought, oh, shoot, I shut it down, and I knew it was happening, and my guides said to me, and they were just, I could hear them laughing, and they're saying, we told you, you're going to have to work on your fear. And it's an innate fear. It's a protection. It's a preservation instinct that we are hardwired with, that yeah. we have to be able to get beyond. That's why some of the kids don't have the same issues. Because as an adult, you've gone through some of this social conditioning that teaches you certain things are unfamiliar and maybe potentially dangerous. But there's also that hardwire where the hawk sees the mouse goes, uh-oh, there's the shadow, I need to run. Well, that was, for me, the shadow. I need, you know, the automatic body reflex was shut down, there's something unfamiliar here. Even though I had been prepared, they were still showing me what my reflex was going to be on autopilot. Does that make sense?
Oh, sure. The reason, as I was learning about all of these different fields, that I went so slowly into the, particularly the paranormal field, is because I knew that I had to really get a grip on on my own fear, and I had to slowly walk into what were actually very frightening kinds of situations. I've sort of gotten to a point I'm pretty fearless at this point. Although I did have a dream the night before last where it was clearly an alien that was outlined in light. They were fully translucent, except they were outlined in light, and they were kind of, you know, peculiar looking and stringy and sort of floating. And I said, nah, listen, I'm not ready, guys. not yet, you know. I'm getting there, but not yet.
This is all negotiable. Okay, yeah. We're going to have to take a break. Nancy, the book Talk to an Alien is available now. You can check out our website. We're going to take a quick break. I want to come back, and you talk about this. Can they read our minds? I want to know, if they can, what they think of us. And so can we take a little break here and come back? Can you address that?
Do you get tired of styling your hair every day? And do you want a good hairstyle every day? Hi, I'm Sarah Schuster. I went on a website called inventnow.org, and after that, I decided to invent something too. Something called the InstaDo. Just imagine, you just put it over your head like a helmet does, and you pick your hairstyle with the buttons on the side. And you can have instant hairstyle in seconds. People like it. People like Jeff Bart.
I like it.
And people like Kenneth.
It's this helmet thing, and it fits over your head, and it's great.
Thank you, Kenneth. You should go to inventnow.org, and it could help you come up with your own invention. After all, look at me on the radio now.
Anything's possible. Keep thinking. Get started on your own inventions, or just play some games at inventnow.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
I'm home, and I love it. I'm home.
where I belong. I'm home, and I love it. I'm home, where I belong.
It's always nice to come home, but these days, many Americans are at risk of foreclosure and losing their homes. Fortunately, help is available. Making Home Affordable is a free program from the U.S. government that has already helped over 1 million struggling homeowners, and we want to help you.
I'm home.
I'm home.
And I love it. I'm home.
I'm home.
Find out now what your options are. Go to makinghomeaffordable.gov or call 1-888-995-HOPE. The sooner you act, the better chance we can help you.
I'm home.
I'm home.
Where I be.
Brought to you by the U.S. Treasury, HUD, and the Ad Council.
Sassy! Sassy!
This week's episode, Danger at the Old Well.
Last one to the old well's a rotten egg!
Ha-ha! I win! Whoa! Ah!
Sassy! Johnny fell down the well!
I'm wet!
What, Sassy? You know where Mr. Gunderson keeps his rope? Go get it, girl! What? You'd rather use this time to set people straight about shelter pet adoption?
I'm cold!
People shouldn't be afraid to adopt from a shelter? Because shelter pets are screened for sound, health, and temperament?
I'm wet and cold!
Sassy, what about Johnny? What? Let Johnny sit in the well until he learns to be more self-reliant? Sassy!
What'd he say?
Sassy is brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org. Remember, adopt!
All right, you're listening to Conscious Living and Power Radio. Hi there, I'm Wendy Garrett. Talking with Nancy Duterte, and this is... She's known as the Skeptical Psychic. This is a book, How to Talk to an Alien, and you can check out the website, Talk Alien, and find out more. I was hoping you'd have more content from people who were looking to share some of their experiences. I was checking the blog to see if there was anything there yet, so it looks like that's still in the works. But with the stuff that's happening right now, there are so many people wanting to share stories. I saw some of the pictures you have of the alien languages, which you also have the writing. You also have in your book, How to Talk to an Alien. And there's just so much content here. It gives people who've had these experiences a lot more to go with. But I wanted to ask, reading minds, in your opinion, what do they think of us when they read our minds?
Well, let me just back up for 1 second. My website, talkalien.com, is brand new. So I have a bunch of things I still need to tweak on that to get it fully operational. But if they go to theskepticalpsychic.com, there's also more information there, and that's a much more established website of mine.
Excellent. Okay, that's it. Yeah. Thank you.
In terms of, you know, what do they think of us? I mean, I've never been inside the mind of an alien, so I couldn't tell you that. I can only, you know, first of all suggest that they have many of them, but not all of them, because I think we're dealing with many different species and races of aliens, have a certain amount of ease in tapping into our thoughts and our information, which I don't know if you know who. Do you know who Ingo Swann was?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. You said you studied with him.
He was a friend of mine for quite a long time. I never formally studied with him, but he created remote viewing for the CIA,
right?
Basically. And I remember walking down the street with him once, and he said to me, you know what bothers people the most? And I said, what? He said, they really get upset by the idea that you can read their mind. And that kind of stuck with me because, I mean, that was absolutely true. People get very fidgety when they think that you're seeing into their thoughts, because people like to have, you know, my husband calls a little secret garden, you know, a little place where nobody gets to go. And what I have sort of come to the conclusion is that it's just wide open. It's all out there. What we think is out there. And so get used to the idea. Stop judging your thoughts. stop judging others' thoughts and get used to the idea that, I mean, as a psychic or a sensitive, I'm sure you can get a sense of auras.
Yeah.
And auras are evolutions of emotional data that are just being perceived in an electromagnetic kind of display. And the same thing is true of thoughts. And by the way, we have scientists out in California right now who have found ways for computers to visualize or recreate our dreamscapes.
Right.
They can see what we're dreaming. We're not very far away from seeing mechanically what our thoughts, what's inside our heads in terms of thoughts. So to me, that's sort of a, pardon the pun, no-brainer.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're just all sharing information. It's just that we as human beings have shut down the sensitivity level to that, or we haven't made the connections between a thought and what that feels like.
Well, I think part of the fear, too, in terms of, you know, not wanting people to read your thoughts has more to do with deception. And people, in so many cases, think that they are hiding information when their body language or their aura or their energy gives it away completely. And the fact that they are attempting to be deceptive is what is a billboard. That I think, is a little bit of something that we have our own personal issues with ego and that we're going to have to grow up and get beyond. I wanted to go back when you said Ingo Swann, and I had actually bookmarked this because it's right here. It says, my mentor, Ingo Swann, creator of the CIA's remote viewing and psychic spy program. And many of the guests I've talked to have mentioned him as a huge factor in their own development or awareness of this kind of thing. He talks about an encounter he had with somebody, a woman. And can you go into details? Because that's a fascinating story.
Yeah, that was one of his kind of famous stories, and he told me that it was I think it's out of his book, Penetration, and he was having these kind of, I mean, it's all done in a fictionalized way, but clearly it happened, and it was him it was happening to. He is being led around by various intelligence people, and they're trying to get him to connect with various alien intelligences. And he goes out on a trip to California and is in a supermarket in the fresh produce section. And he talks about this, you know, absolutely stunning, curvaceous woman in probably like little itty bitty shorts and some low top or whatever. And instead of getting kind of bowled over by her sexuality, he gets bowled over by the fact that she's not human.
That's a big thing.
Yeah. So he was clearly, you know, he picked up on whatever her energy was, which is not a human energy signature. And I strangely, in retrospect, think I had a similar experience, strangely, in a supermarket and strangely in a fresh produce section.
Produce. Okay, we know they like produce, apparently.
Yeah, apparently. I don't know. I mean, it was just very, very peculiar. Similar thing. I mean, this woman who was quite tall, absolutely stunning, but wearing clothes that were like out of the 1950s, like out of, you know, Life magazine or Look magazine or something, and, you know, bright red lipstick. And there was something just off. And
yeah.
She spoke with an accent, and I asked her where she was from. She said, oh, you will have never heard of it. And I said, try me. And she said, oh, Latvia. And I said, oh, well, I was there a couple of years ago. We talked a little bit, went our separate ways. And it's about a 5-10-minute drive from there to my house. And so that would be maybe a 20-25-minute walk. Well, I had left her only minutes before. I leave, I'm driving back onto my street, and I see her walking down my street, which to me seemed like an impossibility. Now,
yeah.
I'll never know the answer to that. Maybe I've just had this strange experience in my mind, but it was odd.
I think it was meant as a bookmark.
You never know.
I think it was in other words, a trigger. Like right now, you're going, do I connect the dots? But the fact that it's even related is, to me, one of those little things of, are you paying attention? Are you paying attention? Did you get it yet? And it's just all, you know, this is, I think, a way that they are tweaking us to upgrade our own abilities and start connecting dots and being more curious and taking less of this superficial world that we have, a worldview, for granted, and start going, what else is here and why am I missing it? What am I overlooking? Because I think that your encounter, that's just enough to go, what happened?
I think you're 100% right. And I think that, you know, and that goes to the issue of synchronicities, which I have also talked about as being one of the ways in which I believe aliens do communicate, which, and I do believe that because they have certain abilities, mind control abilities, they can cause us to be at certain places at certain times to meet certain people that, you know, to have our paths intersect.
Yes.
And it's those moments where we suddenly, we say, oh, yeah, that was a coincidence, but what a strange, because it means a lot to me. So synchronicity being a meaningful coincidence, I think that's a form of communication. And that's also a form of, did you get it yet? Did you pay attention? Did you link that dot together?
And see, I think that's the important element. I don't think they want to totally control us. I think it's more or less a nudge and a like from a big brother, big sister of, come on, please, it's not that hard. You're making this way too difficult. You know, stop it.
Yeah.
So I think there's that element too. And I'm sure, you know, there are some people who've had negative encounters who are just saying, no, 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 go away. But for the most part, all of my stuff has been more or less a kick in the pants, a jump start. There was one encounter where I had, there was like hundreds of squirrels running down a tree across the street over down a wishing well. This could not happen. It's impossible. I will always wonder, what the heck did I really see? Because my brain wasn't going to tell me.
Oh, yeah, that's interesting.
Oh, well, you know, when you get owls and deer and stuff, well, these were squirrels, and I'm trying to count them. I'm standing there. There's absolutely nobody else on the street. There's my dog and myself, and I'm staring at this incredibly beautiful tree as more squirrels than I can count are coming down from the top of the tree. I don't know where they came from at the top, and then running across the street to, in the backyard, there's a well, and it looks, I call it a wishing well, but it's in a kind of a little garden area, and they're all running and down that well. And then in the next, I walk back by, and they're not there. But I'm like, how, what happened? And I know it was one of those, it's another one of those things that say, so what do you think you really know, huh? Like, darn it. So, you know, maybe a regressive, you know, some kind of a hypnotherapy session or hypnosis regression, something, I don't know. I don't know if I'm actually supposed to know. I know I'm supposed to keep questioning, and that's why I'm talking to you.
Well, what you do know is you saw a bunch of little gray critters go running into a space underground.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. That we assume is a wish is a well is a water, you know, some kind of a subterranean channel.
Yeah.
Hmm. And then what do they turn into when they were there? And what were they before they got at the top of the tree? And how do they all? You know, see, there's so many questions here. I'm doing a logical connect the dots.
Yeah.
The problem is this is illogic, and it doesn't have a neat and tidy beginning and ending. It's all the stuff I can't see that actually fill out the equation. That's the colander, where I'm seeing a tiny frame of reference and trying to make it make sense in my linear thought process. And this isn't supposed to make sense. It's supposed to say the dots aren't what you think. That's annoying.
Yes, I agree. It's because you can't control it.
No.
And it feels a little bit larger than what you know, and that always feels uncomfortable.
Well, and it doesn't have any neat and tidy answers. I don't even know where to go for the questions. So that's the whole point of, you know, okay, where do I start? Well, the start is, though, to continue looking and continue being open and not try and make it a nice conclusion. I don't know what happened. I know what I saw. I know the elements. I know the basic premise of what was happening and the fact that nobody else was there to witness it. was also important. You know, so did it appear to anybody else who could have seen it, or was I the only one who could see it? So this is, all these things make me question when other people see things, what are we really seeing, and how can we draw conclusions when we really don't have, we don't know all the players, we don't know the frame of reference. That's where this stuff to me is so incredibly fascinating.
I think you've hit the nail on the head, and I wish that more people would be able to look at our perceptive universe in the same way that you're looking at it, because you have to be a little bit respectful and resigned to the fact that you are not absolutely in control. And that's where we run into problems with, I think, most people, is that they require the control element of understanding the universe. And we're not masters of it. And I think that you're just remain, you know, there's an element of being submissive and patient for this kind of information, which nobody likes to be.
Patient. Well, my own experiences with this and having seen a progression in 20, 30 years, there's a huge difference of having the encounter and then going back and filling in certain things that I wasn't able to realize in that moment, that I could go back and kind of connect a few dots and then have a few more experiences and get a larger piece of the equation. Because I tell you what, when it blows you out of the water, you're going, holy cow, this is so amazing. And then you have to get off of euphoria. Okay, well, now what? You know, but you don't want to go to work. You don't want to go to sleep. You don't want to do anything but want it to happen again.
Yes, so, absolutely. I totally get it. Believe me, I do.
So then, and you can't force it. It will not happen again in the same way at the same time, and it won't happen in front of somebody else just to give you a little run for your money. Ha, 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 ha. Guess what? Did it happen? Well, yeah, it did. Now what? And you just keep going.
You know, I think also there have been all kinds of cases in UFO history where certain contactees, and I think this goes also back a ways, where, you know, they were at least trying to contact people who were maybe like pillars of the society kind of people, who they thought maybe could really, you know, promote the kind of change that they were looking, or the communication, whatever it was they were trying to do. And so these people, certain contactees took them very, very seriously, took them at their word, tried to, you know, build what they were told to build or to sell all their belongings and go do whatever. And in a lot of those cases, they whatever the communication was or the aliens who were doing it just kind of faded away. And you're left with these situations where you say, well, what was that about? And if, you know, in other words, there seems to be very, very often what feels to us like a trickster element.
Yeah.
That we're being played a little bit. And maybe we, some people have even, you know, hypothesized that, you know, maybe we're just like some big amusement park for aliens. Which,
oh, they're really
gullible. I mean,
go there. It'll be fun.
Yeah, maybe that. Yeah. Or, you know, the other more well-known hypothesis is that, you know, we're just a little petri dish or a group of ants or something that they're playing with.
I think it has to do with our evolution. And we evolution from a species that, and we've had it in our history with the shamanic element of the Aborigines, where they are in touch with not only the tides, but with the non-corporeal element of their environment, where they know where another person is from just being able to be quiet and listen and tune into that vibration. We've lost that, but we have succeeded in other ways in terms of presentation of our own, being able to navigate our physical elements and improve our health in ways that are more mechanical rather than intuitive and bioelectric, which would be self-healing. I think they're trying to remind us and help us consciously evolve into more conscientious, compassionate, and benevolent creatures. And we are a work in progress because we have a few sticking points right now in certain parts of the world which really don't want to do that at all because it doesn't get them any money or material gain. So I think they're trying in their own way, and I do think they're reaching out to people who don't have the wonderful background in terms of, you know, a lot of education and a lot of, you know, political associations. I think they're just going, they're saying, you know what, let's just go to the basics and get one-on-one contact and see where it goes, because there's so many people having these contacts. To me, it is suggestive that we can't do it by doing a big disclosure, because the government and the military stuff are frightened. They think we're going to overthrow the planet. No, we're just trying to get them to be nice to each other before they come out on the rest of the universe, because right now we're a threat. Does that make sense?
It all makes sense. I certainly, you know, I've heard that before. I would only suggest that I think that since we're dealing with many different types of aliens, they're not all on board with what you just said. I think there's a group that
are.
Dang
it. Yeah, I agree.
And so there are certain points when I say to myself, well, you know, if the military and the government, for whatever reasons, aren't being terribly forthcoming even now, which seems a little bit like, really? But from my understandings, there's certain dangers attached to certain types of aliens. And I'm not all of them, clearly.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know that anybody is really feeling totally comfortable with being able to distinguish who they're dealing with exactly. And you know, I've heard from many, many abductees and contactees, you know, they say, oh, well, you know, I've been selected to be the only person who they're communicating with on this planet Earth, and they only speak to me, and they only speak
that's
in a certain language. But I've heard many people say that, and they're otherwise, you know, serious people and whatever. And that's a big red flag, because they're being spoken to in many different languages.
Right.
So, and each one of them is being told they're special, they're the only one. And that seems to be a rather common thread.
But that's a test. That's an ego. That's basically a test for what kind of entity, in terms of a human, you're dealing with. Are you dealing with somebody who has to have the accolades of, hi, I'm the only one, I'm the chosen? Or, you know, another one where I have seen the Native American population who've been contactees, they don't tell anybody. They're not big on, you know, this is just something that's between me and my benefactors, or, you know, I've gone here and I've gone there and they're so extraordinary, but no, it's a special thing and I don't have to tell anybody else to prove it. I know what I've experienced. There's a different kind of personality element, and ego is a huge stopper when it comes to expanding your own consciousness, because you get stuck in the, can I prove it, and is mine bigger than yours? Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So I think that's a red flag. As soon as you hear somebody say, I'm the only one, we're not going to talk to anybody else, it's like, ah, darn it. I think that's a test for whoever is going through that to put the blinders on a bit and say, and why is this important? And why is it only me? Why don't you like any of my other people? Why aren't the other people here worthy? We are all worthy. So it goes back to my own judgment and my own inability to appreciate my fellow cohabitants on this planet, that I think that I am somehow the only one who can get the message across. Because we're not all popular. That's just the way it goes.
I think also it kind of goes to that fundamental human need to have your ego stroked, in terms of, you know, we all want to be special. We really do. And if somebody can play us for that, a lot of us are very, very susceptible and vulnerable to wanting to hear that. And
validation.
I think that you find also a lot of people in the field who, and I found the same thing in the paranormal field, a lot of people sort of want to out-special each other in terms of, you know, oh, I saw, I don't know, I saw a shadow figure. Oh, well, I saw a full-blown apparition. Oh, well, I saw, you know, and it's sort of, everybody wants to get a little bit have something bigger, or at least have a piece of the same thing. And I think it really is important that everybody do exactly the kind of thing that you're talking about, which is just kind of relax, appreciate it, and experience it through a certain amount of discernment for what it is and how it should be shared.
I think right now the word you just said was sharing. Is that the only way we're going to go forward is for all of us to allow that we're each connected to something unique. And if we share it, we may get more pieces of the puzzle from each and every one who has something just a little bit different than what we ourselves have experienced. And when you were sharing some of your information, it's so affirming to hear the background and from your perspective to give me an idea, okay, maybe I need to reconfigure my own interpretation of what's going on. And back to your book, How to Talk to an Alien, what are they trying to tell us? Do you have a general sense? Is there?
Yeah, I think that there the various, and you know, I've only the book is really about a lot of the research that I've done. Okay, and so you have different types of messages, but I would say overall, the message is sort of a hermetic type of a message, which is that the microcosm contains the macrocosm. And once you understand that, it goes to that kind of more New Agey thing, which is we're all interconnected. Well, we are all interconnected, and I'm assuming that many of the aliens are interested in what we're doing and how we're doing it because it has a ripple effect on them and their existence and their world. Well, I'll give you an example. There were... let's see. There's a South African shaman. He got a message. Basically, was that let's see.
Is that Credo Mutwa?
Yes.
Okay.
In the vastness of the cosmos, there is a thinking brain. And then there was a message that was given to a British housewife by an alien from the planet of Garnsvarn. And that message was the deity dwells at the heart and core of the atom. And both of those messages are kind of similar, mm-hmm. you know, in sort of almost diametrically opposed ways. They're very similar. But they both talk about sort of the conscious universe. And we need to get more of a conscious awareness and an understanding of that. I think that's important. That's important. That's why they keep, I think, talking about, you know, how we're ruining our environment and pushing ourselves into a state of unsustainability, which will likely cause wars, which is, you know, will likely cause future unsustainability. So I think there are all kinds of issues for that.
Okay, we're going to have to go. We're going to have to go. TheSkepticalPsychic.com. Nancy, thank you so much. I really appreciate your time. And, yeah, if you're listening right now, check this stuff out, all right? You're going to have lots of questions, and that's the whole beauty of it. Keep questioning.